Podcast, episode 151. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim rocking it out, Elliot.
We are.
Graham, where are my bongos?
Hey, where are they? I want those things.
Phil, I'm drumming on my nuts. Wilson.
Phil is always the butt of your joke.
No, the nuts of his jokes, obviously.
Well, that's because he can take it. That's because he can take
it. He's a brother from another mother. He gets to do that.
That's because he's a nut.
That's right.
Oh, boy. Okay. So now we got to put up the warning, guys. We're not going to pile on Best Buy. We're just going to talk about it. No piling on.
No.
So that seems to be happening everywhere else.
Yeah, I think that the media that's got some sort of release to say that let's write some critical stories about Best Buy.
Yeah, it's kind of blood in the water sort of stuff for the media.
It is, and it started off with that Forbes, actually not an article. Everybody keeps talking about it as an article, but it was actually a blog post by Larry Downs on the Forbes blogs. But boy, yeah, it was throwing chum in the water and the sharks came.
Yep. So guys, what do you think? You know, Tim, you've been very vocal in your thoughts on what they need to be doing. So tell me what you think of, and just to bring everybody up to date, December numbers, not good.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, they had that situation right before Christmas where they couldn't fulfill a bunch of orders, and it looks like their internal systems either failed or someone made a huge mistake. And then they really didn't give customers enough time to make other arrangements and buy products elsewhere. I mean, it was literally a few days before Christmas when they announced that. So to have such a dramatic failure like that during the the season when they make 80%+ of their profits is just horrible. And it just shows the level of problem that they have within the company. And I'm not sure if they can staunch all the bleeding and pull out of this thing. It's really troubling.
Yes, it is. And of course, Brian Dunn came out trying to defend himself, which we'll have that link in the show notes, right?
Yep.
And that he's trying to state the positives that the company that they've accomplished this year. Makes a case. And then the Star Tribune came out this morning with a story by Jackie Crosby on the business page for Best Buy, good enough. And they're saying that, you know, they did okay and the stock actually came back 3% yesterday. Same store sales are only down 0.4% in the U.S., although they're down 1.2% worldwide. But they also said that online sales shot up 26%. But the case that Brian Dunn seems to be trying to make is that, 80% of electronic sales still travel through the store. So it's like the physical stores aren't going away, can't go away.
You mean for the drop ship to the store?
Well,
or you pick up at the store?
He's saying that that's where people walk in and buy stuff, but it also includes
the 40%
of people who order online who pick up in store. So he's citing a study by NPD Group that 80% of electronic sales still travel through the physical store.
Yeah, and I think that all of us would prefer to buy it in a physical store, but if we can buy it online for less money, I think a lot of people are going to do that. And the stores that people are picking up electronics, especially the stuff that Best Buy used to be known for, TVs and the like, are now going to places like Walmart, Target, and Costco.
Right, right. So, I mean, especially with Vizio.
Yeah, they just got huge competition from those big box retailers too to worry about. So they've got competition from Amazon and the like, and then all these other big box retailers are in a better position, selling what they sell too, amongst other stuff.
Some of these other the big box stores. Yeah, if you're including Walmart in that, well, in Costco, they have other higher margin categories that they can average out across. Best Buy doesn't. It's got, basically the electronics category, well, and appliances. And so the story in the Star Tribune cited that you know, Wall Street and Amazon can spread their earnings challenges across many different categories. Best Buy doesn't have the breadth to be able to share the margin pressures. So it's a good story in the Star Tribune that states the other side. I mean, they, you know, there are defenders coming out now, but it's a fairly, you know, even-handed story that just deals with the facts. So,
how important is it to, and it might not be so important in the technology space, but how important is it to have the opportunity to go in and touch and feel and try and examine a product before you buy it? I mean, how important is it? Tim, what do you think?
I think it's very important, and that's been the huge success of the Apple stores, is to have that kind of trade show experience and closer to the customer. And so I think customers want to touch the thing and especially electronics and try it out. So I think that Best Buy has a great opportunity there. That the problem is that they seem to be in denial about the way that the customer, especially their hardcore customers, have changed using smartphones and applications like Red Laser and the Amazon Price Check application to actually make sure that they're getting the best price. And a lot of times at Best Buy, it's not the Best Buy.
Yeah, well, that's the issue. I've done that many, many times where I've shopped for something, or I've made a decision based on reviews that I read online by people that I trust, gone into the store and saw that it was essentially at retail, the price, and gone online and found it for, in some cases, $50 to $60 less online at reputable places like Amazon. And so, you know, I mean, $50 to $60 is real money.
Yeah, absolutely. And at Amazon, you don't pay tax either, which is the other other problem.
Yeah. The question is going to remain, though, guys, how long is that going to last? If we shift more and more of our dollars to online spending, that we're going to
eventually,
somebody's going to have to get a piece of that. There's no doubt about it. We can't lose that revenue stream to fund the country. You know, it doesn't happen that way. So my question is, where does Best Buy go? Let's put it this way. Suppose Best Buy and big box stores like that just go away and everything shifts to online. Where do people get this experience to be able to, touch and play with it? Because I agree with Steve and I agree with everybody that we want to see these things first. We want to touch them. We want to play with them. So what happens? Where do people go for that if online is where, you know, these purchases go completely?
Well, I think you just hit it right on the head. You used the word experience. And so, you know, it's interesting to talk to people like my friend George, who for years was a dyed-in-the-wool PC guy, and finally he ended up buying a MacBook Pro. And based on the Apple one-to-one, he went in for not training, but he went in for hour-long learning sessions on different applications and on the OS itself. He brought his MacBook Pro back almost a year later, and the display was hatched, and they just replaced it, on and on and on. And the guy is just, he's like, I'll never buy another PC as long as I live. And he said, you know, the experience is just so fabulous there. You walk in, and there's a million people in the store, and yet you get your turn if you've made a reservation ahead of time. And they sit down with you and go through stuff. So when I think about the Best Buy experience, and I know a lot of people have slammed them on this, including the guy in the Forbes article about the kid that was trying to upsell him clumsily on the floor to Cinema Now. But I walk in there and I would say, and yes, I would say all four of us are atypical, but how often have you gone in and you know 10, 15, 20 times what the person on the floor knows about that same product?
Well, and it's not just because we're geek weasels like we are. I mean, a lot of people can be like that because now the power of the internet provides that
education.
Wait
a minute, geek weasels?
That's us. We're geek weasels.
No, I'll say geek.
Thanks, does somebody, does
I've
somebody
have that in an endearing way, ladies and gentlemen. So.
Does somebody have that URL or should we buy
geek
it?
Weasels?
Geekweasels.com.
You know, have you ever noticed that Tim always kind of thinks that, hey, wait a minute, maybe I should buy that. He's looking for that next $1 million domain.
I don't know what I'd do with it, but no, it just sounds like a good one.
It's a, well, so I'm as so, you know, yes, we're geeks, but I'm saying that everybody has the ability to be a geek because, you know, the internet allows you to educate yourself before you go into these places. And whereas the poor kid at Best Buy has to know something about everything in the store, you know, the customer can come in.
Absolutely.
And say, you know, I've spent the last 2 days researching this and he's going to know more than that poor kid. So,
right.
Well, I think so. The question becomes, but you know, my concern is, you know, Best Buy is a major employer in this city. And if Best Buy needs to make a change in the way they do business, whether that's scaling down stores or closing stores or changing their business model, that is going to have an impact on our economy. But is that what's going to have to happen?
What, change at Best Buy?
I mean, as far as are they going to downsize as we talk about them basically turning into showrooms for their online business, or this is of great concern to me because I want this company to make it because it's a local employer. You know, somebody in New York, somebody that lives in Philadelphia, they hardly give a shit. It means a lot to us.
Yeah, I'll just go out on the limit. I don't think a specialty retailer like Best Buy has a future, and I'll throw Barnes & Noble into that to that bucket as well. The only big box retailers that will make it are those that are diversified, that have different profit centers. Target, I think, is in good shape. I think Walmart is, and Costco and the like, those big warehouse clubs. But places like Barnes & Noble and Best Buy and others that have a niche of that, those are all going to go online or all go digital. They've got a really big problem. So that does mean that Best Buy has to change to be relevant, but they also have to figure out, you know, long term what their business model looks like. And I think it looks like more like Amazon than it does like a store with all those brick and mortar stores, you know, like a physical retail operation.
What about the report that Apple is going to do a store within a store concept at Target?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, have you been to Target?
There is already a store in a store at Best Buy.
They have a store within a store at Best Buy, but also,
right.
I don't know if you've noticed, but if you walk back to the electronics area in Target, they have separate people that are standing there selling phones.
Right.
And
did you read that story though carefully? It's not going to be in every Target.
Correct.
It's only going to be in metropolitan areas that aren't close to Apple stores.
Right. Right.
So if you're, let's say, in Des Moines, I don't even know if there's an Apple store or not in Des Moines. Let's just say that there wasn't.
I think there is at the West Des Moines Mall. Hello, Hawkeyes.
All right. Bad choice. But a metro area that doesn't have a lot of Apple stores like we do, it would totally make sense to have that in a Target
because they're going to pay as they are in Best Buy, they're going to pay for the staff.
Right.
You know, it's a third party, and Apple is notorious for understaffing until demand proves they need the staff. And it's happened again and again and again and again in the Apple stores. So, you know, they're clearly trying out this concept to see what happens. But, you know, I think about Alexandria, Minnesota. You know, if you want to buy an Apple product in Alexandria, yes, there's a Best Buy there. So you can do the store within a store, but you got to go up to Fargo, or you got to drive down to the Twin Cities in order to get to an Apple store. And so, yes, they could go into Best Buy, but you know, now you got another outlet that essentially is selling because they're all basically the same price. And so you have another opportunity there.
Well, yeah, I think I think this sounds very smart for Target to do it. They're, you know, I don't know why it took so long for Apple to offer them the opportunity or what, but you know, when Tim said a bit ago that Target's going to do fine, yeah, maybe going forward, but they've had their real problems lately too. Their numbers are not good. So they need to be doing more things themselves. But I
think they have a better shot at a long term future.
Longer term, yeah.
That looks similar to what they look like now with the store profile, and someone like Best Buy, who's high profit items are just going away. I mean, they remember, only 5-6 years ago, you walk into a Best Buy and half the store was DVDs and CDs and stuff that just doesn't exist anymore.
Well, yeah. Graham, you brought up the thing with the Bloomberg story on Best Buy about being a buyout candidate. What's that about?
Well, Eric Wiefering picked that up on his blog at the Tribune, and it is a fascinating story, and it's essentially saying that the private equity firms are looking at a company like Best Buy as a buyout candidate now because they throw off so much cash and their stock is so depressed that the link is in the show notes, but essentially they're saying that a buyout firm thinks, the shareholders could get $37 a share when it's only trading around 24. So there's going to be pressure from the shareholders to sell if potentially here. And, this is a classic case of private equity, looking at an opportunity, with a company that puts out that much cash flow. That's what they like to buy, and there have been any number of private equity deals for retailers. Now, Eric Wiefering notes in his blog post that not all those have turned out very well by any stretch. In fact, maybe most of them haven't turned out well, but nonetheless, there's pressure there. There will be pressure there. So Brian Dunn not only has to get the business model right, which he keeps saying there's nothing wrong with the business model, which kind of fascinates me. Yeah. But he's not only got that problem, he's got to get that stock price up.
I think that the problem that they have is that they think that their experience, the years of experience with retail is, what it takes to figure out what they need to do in the future. And I think that works against them. I think all that those years of experience will really get them thinking that they will be making the right decisions when they won't be. They need people that have a different perspective, that think more like their customers, to be in positions of authority, that can make decisions, that can make changes. And I don't think that they're thinking like that at all. I think they're thinking, let's hire someone that, that's had 30 years of experience at Target or whatever, to come in and rethink our operations.
Yeah.
They don't need that. They need someone. Right. They need someone that really understands the way their customers think.
Oh my God, does this sound like Clayton Christensen?
Yep.
The innovator's dilemma, innovator's solution, talking about all the companies like DEC, the vacuum tube companies, all these companies that did the right stuff for their business as their model existed, but today. When things were happening that were disrupting their businesses, they never reacted to that disruption, or they didn't intentionally disrupt themselves.
And that's one thing that Apple has done. I mean, they disrupted themselves and the way that, and they're continuing to do that. I mean, they're putting their Macintosh business out of business right now. Yeah. And I think they're doing it, they're intentionally doing it. Because if they know if they don't do that someone else or the way that technology is moving will make the computer kind of go away. So they don't want to be in the Macintosh business. They want to be in the consumer electronics business, making products that the customers really want. And so that's why they're doing what they're doing. And I don't think Best Buy is thinking like that. They're thinking we're in the big box retail business and we just have to figure out this problem. And we're going to figure it out with our, years of experience in big box retail because we're experts at this. And they are. It's just that their business is radically changing and they need to really think about it very differently. So I'm not sure if they have the right people to be making these decisions in the top positions.
So you don't think Montgomery Ward's would work now as a catalog retailer?
How about that Sears thing, huh?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, isn't that doing well?
I still happen to have my Ward's airliner radio. Now, just a second there.
we'll feel. That's nice. Thanks, buddy.
It's right next to my Red Ryder BB gun.
Hey, let's shift gears a little bit because, Graham, you were the one who brought up the CES preview stuff, which I thought was I had no idea there were that many Minnesota-based companies that were headed to CES, including our favorite guy, Darren Klum at Cram with his fabulous device, which we'll put a link in the show notes so people can read about it.
Yeah. I was shocked to see there were that many Minnesota companies too. But, you know, there are a lot of these little accessory companies that kind of operate around the ecosystem of Best Buy and Target that are based here in town that you've never heard of, that most people have never heard of. And I got to admit, in that story that the Business Journal ran with the photo gallery of the new products,
yep,
they're going
to
be.
I just have to say, I hate that when they do the stupid photo gallery, so you get all these different page views.
You got to,
yeah, click. That's why they do. That's why
everybody's isn't that doing it. Isn't that the most annoying thing?
Yes, because you know they're doing it on purpose.
Well,
or seeing a Minneapolis Star Tribune online article and it's 5 pages long. Yeah. And there's like 4 paragraphs on each page.
You know, the only site that gives you a way around that I like is Business Insider. They do that all the time too, but they have a link down below that says view as one page.
Bingo.
And it's like, thank you. but anyway, yeah, I clicked through all
those. But we digress.
We digress. I clicked all those photos of the products Minnesota companies are introducing at CES next week. And I don't think I had heard of any of those companies, with the possible exception of that weird acoustic or audio company. What? And I don't know why I would have heard of that. But
Graham, you haven't heard of Polaroid?
Oh, God. I don't even count that one. That's
when I saw that, I saw Minnetonka-based Polaroid. Yeah. I thought, wait a minute, aren't they from Cambridge, Massachusetts?
Well, that's because Tom Petters bought Polaroid.
Yeah, is Tom Petters going to do a live remote from his cell on that one?
I got to tell you, and I think you alluded to this, Graham, this is my favorite product in this. And maybe this harkens back to my days in audio sales, but that Audio Research reference amplifier, just, I get wood looking at that thing. That's a beautiful looking thing.
Yeah,
that is beautiful.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. So,
That Polaroid Z340 is just nostalgic, though.
Yeah, it is. It's very much so nostalgic.
It looks just like something that might have been like 1980, you know? Polaroid 1980.
Yeah.
The industrial design.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
How come it's taken them, you know, this long to come up with something like that?
I mean, that's Tom Petters got in the way.
That would seem to be an obvious thing. If you've got the Polaroid brand, why don't you do a digital printer connected to a camera?
Well, that printer technology has actually been out for quite a while, but this one, this new one, people are not, it's not getting very good reviews, unfortunately, but
yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited for Darren Klum because I'll tell you, that is a high powered launch that guy is doing. And when you look at the team behind that,
that product,
whoa, you know, it gets pretty exciting. Apparently, you're going to be able to have as many as 450 movies and or TV series on that device.
With one huge exception, I'm so sorry to interrupt, one huge exception is that for anyone that doesn't know this, when you stream a movie from Netflix, even if it says it's HD, often it's only 720p, even if it is a 1080p stream, the bit depth of that stream is significantly less than a Blu-ray disc. And so this device will not only handle all of those deep Blu-ray quality films, you know, movies, but also they'll be able to put 3D movie content on there to drive 3D televisions.
Yep.
And other stuff. Right. You should see the user interface on this thing. I mean, he is really, I'm stunned that these guys have really knocked it out of the park like this.
I am too. I mean, and I think they're going to get a lot of attention. They've already been covered in the Wall Street Journal a week or so ago.
Right.
And, you know, this thing, I mean, they're going to get a lot of attention. Now, unfortunately, they're not going to be shipping to us beta users. They're letting 2,000 people in till the second half of the year. So they're kind of doing an early, quite early launch here, but they're going to stir up a lot of attention, that's for sure.
And one of the stealth things that was in here, I don't know if you guys know, but United Health Group was using a lot of different technologies internally. And
oh, yeah.
It became so successful, and they had so many different organizations that wanted to buy that technology from them that they spun off a company and called it Ingenix.
Yes.
And that became a $1 billion-plus division of United Health Group. Well, so now they've come out with this mobile application called Health for Me. And I don't know anything about it other than what I've just seen publicly. But when you look at what they have and you understand how deep they go with process and connectivity, because they've got a heck of an IT group there and all that, I think we're going to hear a lot from United Healthcare in the healthcare space with mobile technology.
Yep. And I should have mentioned that they definitely were one of the companies I'd heard of that are going to be at CES. But
they're
showing mobile apps. And I think there's maybe a special part of the show floor that's just for healthcare stuff. There's certainly going to be a lot of fitness related stuff.
I'm personally very excited about the VibaBody Slimmer.
Wait
a minute. It's like, this is what it says in the description. The machine delivers a mechanical stimulus that exercises the entire body during a workout. Is this similar to like an electronic version of strapping that taking that big strap around your butt and wiggling it? Is that what that is?
You look like a you know, like a blithering idiot standing there vibrating. Yeah,
you look good sitting there in your Snuggie doing that. That'd be nice.
Well, in 2000...
Try to use your iPhone when you're on that.
Well, in 2006, Doug Olson was in between gigs, and I had gone off on my own, and he and I went to CES. He was going out there to do something for a company, to do some recap stuff, and he goes, hey, I'm going to have this huge room. Do you want to come out? And I go, hey, that'd be great. So we walked the show floor. And my only mistake was going to this display with a fitness thing. It had a bike, and you'd get on the bike, and the faster you would pedal, the faster the video game would go. You know, they had this this biking thing, and all of a sudden, I'm cranking on this bad boy, and I realized I'm sweating like a pig. I had to walk around for about an hour all wet. Anyway.
I also noticed the Sanus, the iPad, was it the iPad wall mount from Sanus?
Yes.
Yeah, that looks really nice.
Nice, but it looks huge. I mean, can we get something a little daintier to go with the
look? And there are, I looked at the Micro Center. There's actually a really nice sleek one that's an under cabinet mount for the kitchen.
Okay.
And it just, so the iPad just swings down.
I've seen a better one than that, though. People are using these things in the kitchen. I mean, recipes and stuff. There's one you can mount on your refrigerator that looks pretty cool. And I think one of the chefs, I can't remember which one, came out with it. So, there'll be a lot of iPad mounts at CES. A whole row of them, probably.
Yes.
But, you know, the thing that gets me about CES is, did you see that story that M.G. Siegler did on TechCrunch? Apple's already won CES without being there. For the fifth year in a row. But anyway, he referenced how all the PR people and marketing people whine, how they hate to go to this thing. You know what I mean? And he said, it's unprecedented. There's no other show like this that people hate to go to, you know? And he was saying how happy he is. He doesn't have to, you know?
Oh, everybody loves to go to that event because they get to go to the Adult Video Awards.
Remember when Steve was talking about breaking out into a sweat. I don't know why that reminded me of the porn show, but the porn show is not going to be concurrent to it this year.
Yeah, so PMA is. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So
the Photo Marketing Association show?
Oh, my.
The which?
Photo Marketing, so PMA, is the other show that's there at the same time.
Okay, so wait a minute. I'm going to be in Vegas on the 18th. Tell me that the porn show got moved to the 18th.
You might, probably did.
Might be lucky. You might get lucky. No. The affiliate show, one of my buddies from W3I is going to be at, also overlaps the first day. So that's Monday, Tuesday, I think. So there's always so much going on in Vegas, but...
Well, the Wired did a nice little preview of CES, just a basic overview of the five trends to watch at CES. Did you guys see that by any chance?
No.
They identified Microsoft's bid for relevance is one, Ultrabooks another, tablets, of course. What else?
What can people do with tablets, though, that hasn't already been done? The only thing is going more low end, I guess.
This is the good one for Steve. It's the Internet of Things. It's the connectedness.
Yeah,
there we go. About
appliances, cars, fitness gear, and then the next generation of TV. Obviously, talking about LG's 84-inch and Apple TV and things like that. So I'm sure that it'll all kind of dovetail into that. But yep. I noticed 3D is sort of fading. Thank God.
Well, it's too expensive and there's too much to do and you got to have a whole nother content direction and it doesn't make sense to me.
It's just a gimmick too. I mean, have you seen 3D movie? I mean, it's just not, it's kind of cool, but it's kind of not. And it's something that I'd rather actually see the movie in, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
in pristine quality, regular D, you know?
Yeah. You wonder what
like yours colorized or not, Tim.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, Avatar is kind of interesting in 3D, but it's not, you know, it's 2D is fine too. You know what I mean? You get the same sort of thing. You have the same sort of experience with that movie.
Yep.
And that's one of the better ones in 3D. And then it seems like every other movie, have you seen that they're coming out with Titanic in 3D? So it's Titanic, yeah. Right? But it's in 3D. Well, it's like, wait a minute. This is like a movie that's been, 10, 12 years old? I don't need to see that.
James Cameron is a little short on scratch, so he needs
to. Yeah. Right. And I don't need to see the 6 Star Wars movies in 3D either.
Right. I was going to say, I wonder what Best Buy, we haven't talked about what Best Buy might be featuring in their booth or booths. Maybe it'll be interesting to hear what they do there.
I think they're going to feature the going out of business sale.
I was going to say, are they going to be approached more by the business reporters to explain what the hell's going on with the company overall?
Electric scooters.
Oh, there you go.
Ah, that is true. You're right. They probably will have one there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I take back all my criticism. Electric scooters will save Best Buy.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Well, we could revisit that. We could go back, loop all the way back to that discussion again, because you know what is it that will save Best Buy? Is there something that will?
Well, save? You know that may be a thread though. Maybe there is a something to do with stuff like that. I mean, electronics.
Holodeck.
Maybe refrigerators with RFID embedded, and you know maybe there's mm-hmm. something with mundane products like that the Best Buy can really get behind.
Well, that's like the startup product store that in New York that I talked about last week. I still think there could be something there, but for them too, for Best Buy, you know, with the new products that startups are coming out with, just to be a place where people want to go, to learn new stuff. And, you know, they need all of that. They need theater, retail theater, they need a reason for people to go there, excitement, the whole thing that Apple did with their retail, which is just astounding when you look back at it, where they came from nowhere and just did that whole thing, entered a new industry or a new category.
Have you been reading the criticism that the Apple stores are starting to, come out?
No, what's that?
Yeah, there's
no. Believe me, Graham hasn't seen that. He never.
I don't see anything bad in
Apple. No, I was kind of surprised. It was. I think genesis of it was an ex Apple Store employee kind of posted an open letter, kind of a thing.
Oh, a disgruntled.
Not really disgruntled. It was more saying, I worked. He no longer works at Apple, and he said, I remember the old days when, people were better trained and, there were fewer people to take, that came in so you could spend more time with people and get to know them and all this stuff. He was sort of hearkening back to that and then saying that there's some real problems now where you don't have the kind of people that you had before, and there's pressures to turn, you know, customers over very quickly. And every time I go to the Apple Store, I mean, it's just jammed.
Yeah.
And you go to the Genius Bar, and you are, I mean, you're efficiently treated, and I've never felt that I've, you know, been rushed off or anything.
But it's
I could kind of see that. So you're starting to see some chinks in that armor. You know,
I remember the days that you used to go into an audiovisual store and spend 2 hours with the high end tech geeky guy, and you'd sit in the speaker room and AB speakers. Yeah, I remember that too. But it doesn't necessarily mean it was the best thing. I mean, it took forever to buy a stereo, and it cost you a lot of money.
Yeah. I think a lot of that just comes with growth, you know, and as they get, the stores are just unbelievably crowded. I mean, you know, and they, I don't know if they're expanding a lot of them to try to help, you know, take care of that. But I know the stores they're opening, the new huge ones are much, much bigger than the stores we're used to. But yeah, it is sort of a pain to go into one now and deal with the crowds sometimes. And, you know, the Genius Bar does run late. It's done that to me a couple times. They always apologize, but, you know, you go in there for your appointment and, you know, you might have to cool your heels for 20 minutes or a half an hour until you actually get seen.
Oh, you mean we have to spend time looking around the Apple Store? Gee, that's
well, yeah.
but again, I'll bring up the fact again that their strategy is to be behind demand, not to be in front of it.
Right.
And so it's you know, if there's spikes that happen, you know, consistently in a given store, then they'll staff up, and they try to ride the wave of demand, but they make sure the demand's there first before they staff up, so they don't have to lay people off and, you know, and all that. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that they were so careful about that. But one thing I did learn, which sort of surprised me, is those workers in there aren't paid very much. The entry-level people are, right? I mean, it's not all that much above minimum wage, is it? I mean, what do they get, $12-14 an hour, maybe, if you're lucky?
Yeah. Well, it depends. I mean, obviously, the longer you're there, or if you're full-time, it's different. But
I suppose
it's a retail job, so
yeah, those never pay well.
Yeah, too bad. Well, hey, let's shift gears a little bit. Phil,
yes,
you ran into Al Franken.
Yeah,
I asked him about the Protect IP and the SOPA.
Okay, so give us the backstory. So you're just walking down the street, and Al Franken's
just walking down this. No, I was meeting with a colleague at a Caribou over on Nicolet and Burnsville Parkway, you know, down here south of the river, and you know, because things really do happen here. And was sitting there in the Caribou, and Al Franken and his one of his assistants came walking in, and they had just, I guess, made an appearance after our discussion. I found out he had just made an appearance at an elementary school, and they were going to another education outlet, and you know, they were doing the sort of grip and grin sort of thing. So I said, you know, I reintroduced myself because we had the pleasure of meeting Al at the Overnight Web Challenge, last year, and so. Reintroduced myself and asked if I could ask him a few questions about SOPA. And we sat down at the table and immediately got into the discussion. And he was very frank in saying that he was not overly familiar with the SOPA language. He is obviously, the Senate is sponsoring the PIPA, the Protect IP Act. So yeah, right. He was much more confident in the wording of PIPA. And to tell you the honest truth, I haven't spent much time with PIPA as opposed to reading through SOPA and reading articles on SOPA. So we were kind of at different disadvantages there. The interesting thing that I walked away with is you know, realizing and talking to Al Franken is that here is a guy that used to be in the entertainment industry. So he has a very keen connection to protecting that the IP and protecting the artists there. So I think that we did talk a lot about, yeah, there needs to be some way of protecting those artists and keeping their intellectual property, you know, safe and secure. But I, you know, my contention is it's not it's not the spirit of the bill. It's the language of the bill that we have a hard time with. And of course, I didn't have the language in front of me that I could necessarily talk to him at length about, and he wanted to get going and move on. So, but I enjoyed the brief discussion that I had with him. So.
Did you get him to sign your Stuart Smalley book?
I was never a Stuart Smalley fan. I was much more of a, you know, what can you do for me, Al Franken? I was more of a,
I love that.
But it, you know, let me ask you, because look, we're very much involved in the tech industry. We're very much involved in the internet and the interactive way of life, and we are believers of keeping that, you know, almost, you know, sacred, and we want to protect our freedom of speech online. But do you guys also believe that there is a need for some sort of protection of people's intellectual property?
Absolutely.
Well, okay. So as a producer of intellectual property in one of our business units,
I think the word intellectual is a little bit, that could be a little bit sketchy there.
You know what? Don't say that to my bride, otherwise she'll just slap you upside the head. But we, you know, we do a newsletter, and we do seven ebooks a year, and we do color forecasts and all kinds of, you know, physical product, but also most of them are digital. And so the ability for people to just send it around is pretty keen and key. We've worried about it for a very long time. You know, there's no way for us, because we don't have any DRM on it, there's no way for us to protect it. And so we've thought for a long time about this, and I have specifically about what it means to us. And at the end of the day, I am totally against both SOPA and the Protect IP Act, because not because of these organizations need to have some level of protection, especially from offshore organizations that are serving. I mean, I understand that intellectually, but I also understand that nothing has ever worked. DRM doesn't work. It's been cracked. People find a way around everything. I mean, even when Adobe put in Flash streaming so that you couldn't even download the Swift file, a Swift file would actually not appear. It would actually, the bits would push to your screen and then they would go away. They'd go into a temp file and that temp file would be automatically purged. And they did that. Actually, the porn industry drove it as a connection. But then what happened was people were using screen recording software, and they were recording it anyway onto their own computer, and then they were putting it up to BitTorrent. So you can, no matter what, you can steal the stuff. So, you know, once it's digital, that's it. Cat's out of the bag. And so to take a sledgehammer to the internet and to say we're going to do this, especially when the doors that are open a crack are doors that could be swung open wide by an administration down the road. And you don't like Minovate because of some of the things that they're saying? Well, guess what? We found some links on there to organizations that are allowing downloading of protected intellectual property. So we're going to cut off Minovate. Would that happen? No. Right? But
could it happen? Door, yes.
Yeah, because of the amorphous language in both of them. That's the problem. And also the onus on Google and the hosting companies and Bing and all the other tech companies that would have to somehow figure out how to police all this, and then going in and mucking around with the domain name system. It's a nightmare waiting to happen. End of rant.
Yep.
Anyone else want to weigh in?
Well, if anybody's doubting what SOPA, you know, all you have to do is read this great post by Steve Blank, Why the Movie Industry Can't Innovate, and the Result is SOPA. I thought that was the best post I've seen that makes it so clear, you know, that it's innovation that's the problem, you know. And the damn industry is run by lawyers, you know.
Well, I'm gonna put two links in the show notes. One to the Wikipedia article on SOPA, and the other to the Wikipedia article on the PIPA Act. And so even if you don't want to go read the bills, because I will tell you that
they're dry.
Oh god, it's so hard. But if you just read the article, you'll get the gist of the opposition And actually, both of them, I think, are relatively, objective. Yeah, they're relatively objective. So,
relatively speaking.
Yeah, you always got to take stuff with. But one thing that it does say right at the top of the PIPA, it contains weasel words. Vague phrases.
Geek weasel words?
No, not geek.
Oh, I'm going to regret ever saying that, aren't
or
I?
Or lawyer, oh, Phil, lawyer Phil, weasel Phil. Words.
Yeah. I'm going to regret ever saying that.
That's okay.
No. I mean, listen, I know a few geek weasels. Just don't, trust me, I know a few geek weasels. We all know a few geek weasels. Those guys that are geeks but are still weaselly. You know, we know those people, but I don't want to ever... I was just spouting off. So anyway,
I know.
But did you guys, just out of curiosity, did you see the Bloomberg TV with Reddit Alexis Ohanian from Reddit?
No.
Did you see that? Well, he was talking to Bloomberg about SOPA. And I don't think he necessarily did. I don't feel like from a guy like me, I didn't necessarily think he did movement to stop SOPA and PIPA a whole lot of favors because he came off as kind of arrogant. It kind of came off weaselly. And his concept was, here's the quote, in creating this legislation about something that frankly they don't understand, Congress is going to obliterate an entire tech industry and the United States is collateral damage. I don't think you can obliterate the tech industry. I personally don't think you can obliterate. You know, Steve, you said it yourself. DRM was cracked.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think that's one of the great things about tech. You can't obliterate it.
Well, and there are already tons of places where you can go to get, for example, WikiLeaks, and then also sites that have been shut down, places that you can go for the IP addresses. So you can just put the IP address in. And boom, you're there. So, I mean, it doesn't work. It's not going to work. And especially and that's what he was talking about with Reddit, is that so many people, if they're talking about something, people will put links in the comments like crazy. And so, you know, they'd get shut down. That was his point. But
well, they could shut down. I mean, if you took the language to its literal extent, yes, they could get shut down. Sure.
Yeah, but
they could get shut down for so many other reasons. It's just,
no, I know.
Or you know, and when you say shut down, they get moved because they don't really get shut down. Remember, this is all happening in the virtual world, and it's just a matter of moving. So,
well, and you know what's interesting is that, and I'll see if I can find the post about this, but it was a geek who had gone through the process of ripping a DVD. And the things that he had to do to pay attention to that, getting the file format, doing the torrent on it, uploading it, doing the post and all that, and how much time it took. And he said, even if you were flipping burgers at McDonald's, the ROI isn't there for going through that whole process.
Yep.
And he said, even downloading torrents, he went through a popular movie, and there was one that had like 1,800 seeds at the time on BitTorrent, and he figured that the movie would come in. It was like 4.6 gigs or 4.2 or something, and he figured it would come in instantly. And he said it took a day for the movie to come in. And so then he argued for Netflix, and he argued for less expensive digital delivery of movies. And he said people will look at that and say, no, I want it now rather than I want it 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 or 24 hours later. And steal it. And so it feels like a business model change, not a technology hammer.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting to see that, you know, I guess the one thing I didn't get to talk to with Al Franken was, you know, there's a whole lot of other really big problems in the world. Is this really one of them?
Well, it is if you're in the Democratic Party and the movie industry is behind you in a big way.
Say, Phil, did Al say tell you to say hi to your Minove buddy Graham?
No, I
met him at a fundraiser thing and told him his
what
dad,
were you doing at a Democratic fundraiser?
His dad
the hell?
Well, I get around, dude. No, I stumbled into one. No, Joe.
I stumbled into it. It was a mistake.
Joe, yeah, I stumbled into one. I was drunk. No, Joe Shriver, a founder of Duap, is a good friend of Al's and supporter, and he held it at his house in South Minneapolis. And anyway, but I had to tell Al that his father used to call on me. He was a printing salesman, Joe Franken.
Oh, wow.
And he was fascinated by that. And, you know, he was an old guy at the time. His father was and is long gone now. But it was my first job and in a tech company. And I bought printing, among other things. And he called on me. And so he called his wife over and he said, hey, he used to know my dad. So funny. Anyway, that was my little experience with
Your
Al.
Brush with greatness.
And actually, Phil, go ahead, yes? Tim.
I was going to say, I think that people want to know, is Senator Franken a coffee or tea guy?
Coffee.
Is it black or does he put
cream? No, I believe he had cream.
Oh,
okay. Oh, cream.
How about sugar? Any sugar?
I didn't notice sugar. Definitely cream, though, because he needed to get a refill on the decanter there at Caribou. So.
Well, see, Phil and I drink our coffee like a man.
That's right.
Nothing in it.
Shouldn't have anything in it.
Yes. Say, by the way, Graham, when are you going to come out of the closet as a liberal?
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, right. Yeah, don't hold your breath.
Yeah. Oh, funny.
Oh.
Well, what's coming up, boys? What do we got going on?
The New Hampshire caucus is coming up.
The
New Hampshire primary.
No, we're not following.
No.
How exciting.
Switch to a political blog.
Yeah, let's not. No. There's enough of that. Believe me, we're going to hear so much this year that
the noise is
going to be deafening. Oh, my God.
It's going to be an interesting primary right up until Hillary Clinton challenges Obama. Wouldn't that be crazy?
That would be crazy,
man. It'd be crazy.
That'd be like Eugene McCarthy, Bobby Kennedy, you know, going after Johnson.
Yeah. I think we should write in Jesse Ventura.
Oh, God.
I know.
Please don't.
No. Doesn't he live like in Mexico now?
Yeah, he does. He lives down in Baja, California. Yeah.
What a goofball.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, my
just
God.
A goofball. Anyway. So what's this club entrepreneur that's going on
This is a great recurring monthly lunch series that Rick Brimacom launched actually a couple of years ago, and I've managed to attend the majority of them. I don't get there every month, but this month he's having Mary Meehan talk about trends. You know, one of the founders of Iconoculture, which was sold, and she now has another firm. And so I always like to hear anybody talking about trends, and she's as good as anyone at noticing and documenting what she sees coming down the pike, and particularly in the way of consumer trends. So that's at 11:30 at the Minneapolis Club, a grand old place.
I love that place.
Oh, it's so great. And we do it in the main dining room. I actually got to do a talk at one of them there. And it's just a wonderful place. And you always run into somebody really like famous whenever you're in there, you know.
Well,
like
we
Stanley used to- Hubbard, you turn around and, you know, running into some, you know, big dude like that. But it's a great event that draws about, 75, maybe 100 people each month. $25 includes parking. It's a good event.
And she's one of the founders of Iconoculture.
Yep.
And just a real trend forecaster and all that. Yeah, when I was in a fraternity, we had an event down at the Minneapolis Club, and we had to wear.
Wait, it was one of those garbage can parties?
No.
Where everybody brings
green. It was a toga party.
No, Governor Wendell Anderson was an SAE, and he had us over to the governor's mansion once. Then we did this thing at the Minneapolis Club, and we all had to wear suits, and we were in there, and we all would walk around going, well, Muffy, I wonder what everyone else is doing tonight.
Yeah, right. I wonder what the poor people are doing.
Yeah. Pretending like we were movers and shakers.
You know, anyway. They used to have that jacket and tie policy, but of course that's long gone, and I regularly show up there without a jacket. So
You not go if you had to wear a jacket and tie?
I probably wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't bother, you know, it's It's just so foreign to me to even think about dressing like that, except for weddings and funerals.
Yeah.
And I'm going to a wedding later on today, and I'm still not going to wear a tie. Well, I might wear a tie. This is my brother-in-law, so.
No.
Minneapolis cop. I better wear a tie for
you. Better wear a tie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is mini demo's coming up Thursday the 18th. Is that already sold out?
It's freed out. It's not sold out.
Freed out. Yeah.
Got it.
Remember, their tickets are free. So yes, yeah. It is. It's full. I checked this morning before the cast, and wow. Looks like it's there are more tickets to be had. So.
Well, thank you for sending out the email to us anyway. But yeah, the thing came out. I saw it on. I got an email as well from being a previous person and registered right away. Thankfully. Mm-hmm. But it's just like the social media breakfast. Remember when they used to send the thing out, like 6.5 seconds later, it was all taken.
Yeah. So the question is always, how many of those people will actually show up, or how many are jumping on the tickets?
Yeah.
They don't have skin in the game.
Yeah. True.
Would you pay for mini demo?
Oh yeah,
I think I'd pay them. Sure.
People can and should pay $10. Like
yeah.
You know, well, there's the community side. Yeah.
Right. You know. Right.
But yeah, I also got a tweet, a DM from a buddy in Iowa who always makes it up from Des Moines, and he's always managed to be on it right away and learn that he has to grab a ticket really fast or he misses out. So
yeah,
wow. There's also a tech event coming up at Thomson Reuters on the 21st.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, and I'm still scratching my head over why. I mean, I'm glad, and I'm glad they're supporting the community and so on, but.
It's got to be to recruit developers. That's the only possible reason I can see.
An all-day event, though. I mean, it's a morning. It's an all-day event.
Right,
and,
right.
I heard about it on NPR, so I was kind of curious. I'm going to try and make that, but.
They're spending some bucks. Did they have some speakers or something, or they're giving away really good
a $2,000 prize? They're having a coding competition.
Yeah.
And that's pretty amazing. So.
Yeah. And then WordPress MSP is coming up on the 26th.
Yep.
January.
First month back after a couple month hiatus over the holidays.
Right.
I also, I will be moderating Social Media Breakfast on the 27th.
Ah.
I believe it's the 27th. Hang on. Let me check. Let me double check. Yes, it's on media, social media and media with, public media. So TPT and NPR will be there. And so I'll be moderating that panel, details forthcoming on that.
Great. Yeah. I'll make that one.
I'll double check the date here. It is the 27th. Yes.
And where are they doing it?
Don't know yet.
Oh, okay.
I just heard from Michael Roventeen, asked me to moderate. Hey, I love to hang out with broadcast folk, so I'd be glad to. And NPR, TPT, and MinPost will be part of it.
Yeah, if you had a voice for that, that would be helpful, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, I'm working on it. I'm no Steve Borsch.
Oh. Like that means
I don't
anything.
Have my fancy schmancy mic.
Yeah, well.
You know, I just got my cup and my string and Mobile March. We're dangerously close to actually announcing a lot of stuff associated with Mobile March. But
2 days?
2 days. We're looking at a 2-day event, basically a day and a half. It'll be a Friday afternoon, Saturday event, March 16th and 17th. And we'll have more details to come on that, on location and a call for speakers and things like that. So
shoot, I'll be in Tucson, but
you'll be in Tucson. You're going to miss a good, it's going to be, we're going to do a little St. Patrick theme. So, we know that, you'll be wearing your green that day. So
did our criticism of Best Buy earlier, did that screw you up for venue?
No, not at all. No.
Oh, okay, good.
Best Buy is a great venue, but if we want to move into a 2-day event, it's very hard to do a Friday afternoon or a Friday event at Best Buy because
that's true.
They're doing business at that time.
Yeah, exactly.
Or they should be.
They should be doing business. Yeah. Yes. Hopefully they'll be doing business at that time. Yes.
Yeah. Well, with both Cocos available to you, though, that's certainly a great alternative, isn't it, for a venue?
Doesn't really lend itself to the multi-track event or breakout.
No, I was thinking the Friday for sure.
Yeah. No. So we, you know, we've got some good stuff planned, and we're really looking forward to it. And Justin Grammons and Linda Cummings and I, you know, Justin is the driver behind Mobile March, always has been, and he's now off. You know, he used to be with Recursive Awesome, and now with Code 42. We're very excited about the mobile community in general here, and we'll again include a demo section, and we'll be planning some more business and marketing. And some more coding and things
app development.
Well, is it fair to say, Phil, that you're seeking sponsors? I mean, yes. Don't be shy here.
Yes,
now.
We are. We'll be seeking sponsors, of course. Yeah, we need to make sure that we get everything, all the I's dotted and T's crossed before we go asking for money. But yes, we'll be seeking sponsors.
Yep. Sweet.
You had some good ones last year, and I imagine there's even more available to you this year with things picking up around town, I think, in the tech community.
Great. Well, all right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to us. And thanks, guys, for a great show.
Anytime.
You betcha.
We never close.
We never, we're always open for business.
We'll see you next week
on the Minute Eight Gang podcast.
Hey, over and out.
Take care.